sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in a World Series.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series!
You are Locked On Cubs, your daily Chicago Cubs podcast.
But we didn't come here to drink beer! We came here to win this ballgame!
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I said to the Uber boy, I said, take me out with the crowd!
What's going on, Cubs fans? I am Sean Sears, and you're listening to Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. On today's episode, we have part two of our NL crossover with Lucas Smith of Locked On Cardinals and Jeff Carr of Locked On Reds. A good conversation. In this second part, Jeff proposes the question of which prospect was better or has the potential to be better in the NL Central this year, whether that's Key Brian Hayes from the Pirates or Dylan Carson from the Cardinals. And then I asked the guys what they think about our teams being the NL Central teams looking just differently constructed than the Dodgers or Rays, and why that is, and what we could see some changes like coming with the specific teams themselves, whether that be the NL Central or teams in the future, what changes we might adopt from, or some things, trends, stuff that the Rays and Dodgers have championed these last year and a half or so. What are some of the things we could see other teams adopting going forward from there? And then we all kind of share one thing we're looking forward to this offseason to kind of wrap up this NL Central crossover. Make sure you're following Lucas and Jeff on Twitter. You can follow Lucas on Twitter at LJ Fastball and Jeff Carr with three F's and two R's in his name. And of course, you can find Cardinals, Locked On Cardinals podcast on Twitter at LO_Cardinals and Locked On Reds for Jeff Carr's Locked On Reds show. But with that, here is part two of our NL Central crossover with Lucas Smith and Jeff Carr. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning, and why wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brands his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers and access to AutoRock.com at home in your pocket. AutoRock.com is a family-owned business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to AutoRock.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake pads to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in an easy few clicks, delivered directly to your door. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for the professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to autorock.com right now and see all the parts available for your car and truck. Write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so you know who sent you. It's us. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
But I want to move on from the Cy Young conversation. I want to talk about some young guys. And unfortunately, we don't have our Pirates guy here with us. But, Lucas, yeah. I'm going to ask you, because the kind of two-headed part of this conversation, two-pronged part of this conversation, maybe, Sean, you can take the other side on this one, is who is the more exciting prospect in the NL Central? Is it Dylan Carlson or is it Key Brian Hayes?
That's a good question, because Brian Hayes was impressive this season. I pull up his stats as I start talking, but I'll take Dylan Carlson's side, as we'll come to shock to no one. Dylan Carlson is your prototypical outfielder baseball player. He can run, he can throw, he can hit, the typical five-tool guy. And he's kind of the guy that the Cardinals are kind of pinning this next trajectory of the season towards. His final line was not good. 200 batting average in terms of – sorry, my computer's slow. He hit 200, OPS plus of 66. But whenever he came back, because he got called up and then he got sent back down, and when he got called back up was whenever he really started to look good. He got called back up right after September 18th, as I highlight those games in the game log on the wonderful website of Baseball Reference. But in those games, he hit back up to 286. He hit three home runs, drove in 11, four doubles. He was an extra base hit machine. So Dylan Carlson is one of those guys that he can hit, he can run, he can throw. He can really do it all, and he can do it all at a high level. He's done nothing at the minor leagues but hit. It took him a little bit to adjust to the breaking ball, especially to the changeup. Even when he got called back up, his changeup, his numbers against the changeup weren't good. But I think that with him kind of dipping his toe in the water in 2020, I think that it will propel him to 2021. And he can really play any of the three outfield positions at an elite level. So I'm going with Dylan Carlson, and you can call him the same offensively, but I think Carlson's ability to play three different positions at that elite level, I think that elevates him over the top.
Yeah, Carlson's a talented guy. And but like you said, the numbers didn't really suggest it this year, but he didn't really have much help in that offensive lineup either. So that was tough too. But what key Brian Hayes did this year, especially, I mean, I know he made his debut against the Cubs and made us look real silly. He's a very fast player. He's got incredible speed, but he's such an interesting player in the sense that he's a guy that he does have some pop in his bat. I don't think he's necessarily a home run type hitter, but he did find some power during 2019 a little bit. He's a guy that's going to probably create a lot with his legs, though. You wonder longevity-wise how that'll last, but in terms of like what the Pirates have now, you talk about like Key Brian Hayes, you talk about like Josh Bell, those players alone, that's nice to build off of. You wonder what the Pirates have going for them on. Beyond that, though, they have obviously some talented prospects coming through in the next few years, but some of these pieces are likely going to get moved. So you question like what exactly this looks like. But in terms of like having a player to build around, Key Brian Hayes is a fun player to have if you're a Pittsburgh Pirate fan. He's going to steal bases. He's great at getting on base with that speed, which is nice to see. Usually you see a high contact guy like him having to kind of manufacture hits and runs. He does have pop off the bat. He does hit gap to gap. In terms of like who's the more important player, probably Carlson. At the moment right now, the Cardinals really do need a bat, and he's probably been the guy, the bat for a little bit. Him and was it Lane Thomas? Is that the other one too? He's got a decent – he had a couple home runs for the Cardinals a couple years ago, right, Lucas?
Yeah. He took a step back in 2020, but he would be the other guy that kind of the young outfield prospect that I would look at. And you look at Carlson too. Is that the success didn't stop in the postseason? He was 3-for-9. He hit didn't hit any home runs, but had a couple of extra base hits in the series against San Diego. So that's what I like to see. It wasn't just like, you know, the Cardinals, the schedule didn't have to do anything with it. It was really Carlson's talent that came through, and you know, the resurgence did not stop in the postseason when he was probably facing a really good team in San Diego, and he still produced. So I just think that, and like you said, Sean, with the way the Cardinals' offense is and how badly they need a bat, how badly they need protection for Goldschmidt, of some other guy that can hurt you on a consistent basis, I think Carlson is that guy for St. Louis big time.
Yeah, definitely. Defensively, too, Carlson's just a stud. Great arm, fields the position well, like you said, can play all three positions if necessary. Key Brian Hayes, the glove is really good. It's hard to figure out where he's going to be, but his arm is so strong. They've been sticking him at third. He's a guy that he does a lot of things you wouldn't necessarily expect a top prospect to be good at. Because like it's usually like you see the guys like a Nico Horner, for instance, for the Cubs, a top prospect, but not nearly as talented as a Key Brian Hayes. Does a lot of like certain little things well, just like, you know, underhand throws to second, fielding grounders well on tough hops, those type of things. Key Brian Hayes does all that too, but then he's got this arm that's like, I mean, gosh, you could see him pulling off some Nolan Arenado type highlights at third base. But if I had to pick a guy that I would think would be more important to their team, probably Carlson, just because the Cardinals are going to probably be a better team these next couple of years.
Yeah.
And I feel like, too, when you look at Carlson's profile, his BABIP during the regular season was 260. So he's getting a little bit unlucky. I mean, not a ton unlucky, but he made a lot of hard contact and was going right at guys. He even hit a dinger off of Reds pitching this season. So I think moving forward, the numbers that we saw for this regular season for Carlson are going to be a lot different. And on the flip side, Key Brian Hayes, his outrageous numbers in a eensy sample size are going to come down because his BABIP was insanely high. He hit like 465 on the BABIP. That's going to come down. But overall, I think both of these guys are a talent to watch. Key Brian Hayes, I don't think the Reds got him out, which is a testament to him. So it's going to be interesting to see how these guys move forward. I think both are going to be big when it comes to the Central. But I think I'm with you. I think Carlson's got more talent, and you fall back on talent when it comes to baseball.
Yeah, the only thing you worry about with Carlson is the strikeout numbers. Key Brian Hayes does have great play to great patience. We did see that a little bit come through last year. He walked nearly 10% of his at-bats last year. Small sample size, of course, 24 games. That isn't a lot. But he's walked nearly, like, I think it's close to 10% throughout his minor league career. So that's an encouraging sign. But, you know, yeah, two fun guys that will definitely be part of the NL Central conversation in a few years. So I wanted to talk about this before we wrapped up here. It's hard not to look at least of the two World Series teams. I know I talked about this a little bit with you guys before we jumped on, but you look at what the Reds have been able to do, or the Reds, geez. The Reds have been great, but the Rays have been able to do with accumulating talent, finding, you know, it always seems like they take everyone's broken pitcher and turn him into an all-star. They've done that with their bullpen, their starters. And then you look on the flip side of the Dodgers, they've been really good at obviously acquiring great talent like Mookie Betts, but also drafting Corey Seagers and Cody Bellingers of the world. Jock Peterson's still a really good player that probably doesn't make sense on this roster much longer, but it's going to go find a home on another team. But you look at how these two teams have put together their nucleus, I guess their core players, and then you look at what the rest of these NL Central teams are, it doesn't quite match up. It feels like maybe despite us having four playoff teams in this division, it feels like our teams, at least for the Cubs, from my perspective, I feel like I'm a step behind a lot of these teams. How are you guys feeling right now watching this World Series?
I feel like the Rays stole Randy Arozarena from us, and I'm very upset.
I wasn't going to say anything, but
I wanted to hear your take on that.
Okay, here's my take on that. Randy Arozarena is hitting at an unbelievable level right now. Will he hit like this for the rest of his career? Probably not. That's obvious. But the point of the fact is, for the St. Louis Cardinals, you had all these outfielders you could throw into that Jose Martinez trade, because Martinez didn't make sense on the roster. Couldn't play him anywhere because his liability on defense. I didn't mind getting rid of him. I really loved getting back Liberatore. But when you look at guys that you can trade, when you have a guy like Tyler O'Neill, Harrison Bader, and Randy Arozarena, John Mozeliak, the president of baseball operations, went on record a couple of days ago saying that they thought all three of them were comparable. It's really not that close, especially when you look at the two center fielders of Bader and Arozarena. I tweeted out a thread that I'm not going to dig through right now, but the outfielder, their minor league numbers are actually somewhat close. Arozarena is a tick better. But what highlights to me is the strikeout rate and how often Harrison Bader struck out. So would you have seen Randy Arozarena breaking the postseason record for home runs and hits in one postseason? No, but I think you definitely could have seen Arozarena being a better player than Harrison Bader. Hindsight's 2020. I get it. Baseball's weird. You're not going to win every trade. But I really didn't like giving up this trade. There's some rumors flying around that he really only got traded because he released a video last offseason of a profanity-laden speech of Mike Schilt following a postseason win, and that didn't really sit well with the Cardinals. The truth to that will always be unknown. But I just think that Matthew Liberatore better be the real freaking deal if you're going to give up Randy Arozarena. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'll say about it. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I just think that Randy is a really good player the Cardinals should have kept. I'm done.
There's no way he doesn't have like a David Freese-esque like postseason like remembrance now. Like, I feel like he'll pop up on our, because I hope he turns into a star. That'd be awesome. Maybe not for your sake, Lucas, but I hope he does. But yeah, in a couple of years, we could probably see him pop up on a roster and someone plays highlight reel from this postseason. But yeah. Jeff, what's your take? How are you feeling looking at your roster for the Reds and then looking at these two World Series teams?
Yeah, I definitely think that there's a vast gulf, especially in the fielding capabilities. I mean, when you look at Kevin Kiermaier in center field, there's a large circle where if you hit a fly ball, it's an out. Like, Kevin Kiermaier's not going to let that thing drop. And then overall on the Dodgers side, they're really good at putting together rallies. And even though they do hit a ton of home runs, they're also able to hit not home runs and get runs off of them, if that makes any sense. I just tied my mind into a pretzel.
No.
The Reds were terrible at that. They had to hit home runs to score runs. And it was, while it was something where it's like, okay, well, they hit a bunch of home runs, it was still really stressful to watch every game and know that, all right, we got guys on base, but we need a dinger. They're not going to get a base hit. So that was something that both teams are really good at putting together, and, you know, botched pickles notwithstanding. We saw what happens in game four if you just put the ball in play. So I think that that's something moving forward, kind of like you mentioned with going after DJ LeMahieu. Let's see some more contact guys. We got so many big boppers in this division. not even just the Reds, but in this whole entire division, that it's like, all right, let's mix in some basic guys, which hopefully Shogo Akiyama, who I love. I can't wait to see him play more and more and more, but hopefully he turns into that guy. But yeah, overall, I'm looking at, I don't want to say small ball because I was so tired of hearing Alex Rodriguez talk about bunting on ESPN's broadcast of the Reds and Braves games. But I want to see more base hits, more runs and hits and hits and runs and things like that.
Yeah, that's how I feel too. And I think for like postseason, we've seen over these last couple of years, like obviously home runs have happened and that's going to always be a way you're going to score runs in the postseason. But when you're going up against the best pitchers in baseball, so the team's best starters consistently, maybe even on short rest, like you need guys that can hit the ball and put it in play consistently and not just necessarily smash the crap out of the ball. And that's kind of what I feel like the Cubs do on top of not hitting the ball in play either. They're really good at smashing deep fly ball outs. that's awesome. And that's great a lot of times because they do turn into home runs, but especially when everyone, the line, who knows when that'll happen. It could change from the third to the fifth inning at Wrigley Field, but
third or the fourth even.
or even mid inning. You know, you just need those type of bats that profile well as contact hitters that do find gaps, that do keep the ball in play, keep the offense rolling. That type of bat is key. And we're seeing the Reds have a ton of those bats. It feels like everyone in their lineup can do a little bit of everything. But I think the biggest thing for both this Reds and Dodgers team is you've got a ton of versatility and you've got a lot of depth. Because, like, I mean, like, Chris Taylor has been on that Dodgers team for, like, what it feels like 5 years now. I don't even know. He might not be on that team anymore. I think he is still. But, Taylor, like, just, yeah, like, one of those guys who's just, like, I mean, was it 2017 or even 2016 was, like, incredible in that postseason run. And you're just like, what is this guy? Like, what – like, Kike Hernandez steps up in those moments. Like, you have those guys who are just – been on this team for a little bit, but I've maybe not accepted, but know what the role is. So when it comes postseason, they know the little things they need to do. Like every Cubs fan loves to mention Ben Zobrist bunting in that game five against the Giants in 2016 that kicked off the game four against the Giants that kicked off them scoring and they walk off and win that series and then end up obviously going to the World Series and all that, those little things like that. While, you know, I don't recommend bunting all the time, it's those little things like that really help kickstart an offense. And as great as a home run can be, sometimes it's more important to have a guy that can hit the gaps.
Yeah, because a not home run, aka a 300-foot fly ball that falls into somebody's glove, that's still an out.
Yeah, gosh, the amount of times I heard people saying, oh, Kyle Schwarber's really hitting the ball hard for hard outs. It's like, yeah, but they're outs, man. Like, I get, you know, exit velocity is important and everything, and that's great. But if you're going to hit 110 mile an hour into the shift, like, what are we doing? Like, come on. Right.
And that matters, too. Like, you know, you can hit a ball 100 miles an hour off the bat, but if it goes 342 feet for an out, that's a lot different than, like, oh, I hit a line drive to the third baseman that was just unlucky. I think that matters more. Like, if you're going to hit a ball hard, hit a line drive. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and that's more of a traditionalist sense of the game of not always going for launch angle and things like that. But I think when you look at hard outs, the hard outs to right to a fielder or, you know, on a line drive impressed me more than a loud out that went 334 feet to the track.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm there with you. And it feels like, I think we all kind of collectively feel the same way about our offenses, which is they didn't do what they were supposed to. And they did a lot of things they definitely weren't supposed to do. So I guess one final question here before we wrap up. I guess if there's one thing you're looking at coming into 2021 for this club, like what's one thing that maybe people aren't talking about, but you are personally really excited about that maybe fans should be paying attention to. I'll start with you, Jeff, if you want to kick us off.
Of course you will.
Yeah.
I think when it comes to what everyone's not talking about, there's a lot that people are talking about with this offseason with the Reds, because it's very fork in the road type offseason. When you look at the president of baseball ops, Dick Williams, stepping down, Nick Kroll being promoted, who he's been within the organization for 18 years. So he knows the lay of the land. He's not coming in cold here. But at the same token, there's a lot of things that Dick Williams began that he's got to make sure he not only continues, but continues the positive upward momentum. And how do you do that in a climate where you can almost see the Reds shedding payroll instead of adding payroll. So you look in-house at some of the options. I think one guy that some of us are talking about, but most people have kind of written off, is Nick Senzel. He is a guy that constantly shows that when he's healthy, he can play well. But nobody knows when he's going to be healthy. He's not shown consistency in that department. And now, most of it has been just obscure stuff. He's not re-injuring the same thing. Like, it's not like he's got a bum shoulder that just keeps cropping up or a weak knee. It's, oh, he's got an ankle. Oh, he's got a wrist. Oh, he's got an arm. Oh, he's got a finger. Now he's got a toe. Now he's got a knee. It's like all over the place. And this past season, you know, with all the COVID stuff going around, he missed a lot of time that really wasn't explained, although I think everybody kind of has their own, thoughts about that.
I've seen some interesting threads on Twitter about Nick Senzel, but continue.
Yes. So you look at 2021 and you say, well, I want to see him with this amount of batting average, this amount of home runs. I know this is almost going to sound sacrilege, but I almost don't care about that. I want to see him play at least 140 games. That's all I want to see.
Right.
Because yeah. I think if you get that amount of playing time, the other numbers come with it. I don't want to be at the end of 2021 and say, well, okay, so he played 80 games. So what's he going to be like in 2022? Because the question we've had going into 2020, the questions we had going into 2019, and even the questions coming into 2018 is this kid healthy? Is he going to be able to be on the field to produce for the Reds? And we have those same questions entering 2021.
Yeah, that's a great point. There is very much a little bit of a Byron Buxton feel to Nick Senzel at this point. Maybe not to the same extent, because we've seen Buxton really produce at a high level and he's healthy, but Senzel's that guy that really, like, if he's hitting and playing like the top prospect everyone thought he is, like, that Reds team looks a lot different because he is a superstar, like, athlete. He has that potential in him. So I'm hoping for him. I like Senzel. I know when Ryan and I talked to you last time to preview this season, Jeff, and then it got canceled and then, you know, everything just went to the crapper. But the big thing for you, you were talking a lot about Senzel, and we were high on him too. We thought he could be, if healthy, he changes the dynamic of that team.
Yeah, not to be a broken record about saying the same thing that I told you and Sean, you and Ryan. It's like, yeah, he's really the straw that stirs the drink. They've got a lot of good hitters in this lineup, but if he's on, he's the guy that keeps everything kind of gelled together. So hopefully he's healthy next year.
Yeah. Lucas, you are wonderful. I appreciate all the work you do. Now, what's something you're looking forward to for 2021 with this Cardinals team?
I'm really looking forward to, honestly, seeing what moves they make in the offseason. You mentioned, you know, something that not a lot of people are talking about. Something that not a lot of people are talking about is the fact that the Cardinals have very minimum amount in their payroll. The minimum amount of money to make in this offseason, rather. They have some bad contracts on the books in Fowler and Matt Carpenter. So I think that, well, you know, even I mentioned that Springer's a good option. It's more likely that they get more of like a Jock Peterson or a tier two kind of guy. But I am looking forward to, for Dylan Carlson, for a full season of him after having some success in his second call-up. Because like I said earlier, the fact that Goldschmidt has little to no protection for a full season really hindered him whenever Brad Miller forgot how to hit a baseball Paul DeYoung goes through his, you know, month-long stretches of hitting 200. So I think if Carlson can find a way to be somewhat consistent and can be a threat, then I think that Paul Goldschmidt has protection, and it forces guys to pitch to Paul Goldschmidt, because it's very easy to get Goldschmidt out whenever you don't have to pitch to him. He's throwing breaking balls in the dirt, you walk him in all these different baseball things. But I think that Carlson will provide some much needed protection. And I really think the guy that doesn't get talked about a lot at all, in my opinion, in terms of Cardinal fan base, Paul DeYoung, the shortstop for St. Louis. I think he's going to really step into his own this year. He has struggles of consistency. I think when he in the last month of the season, he hit like 202, and the 15 games prior, he hit like 330, this season. So I think that he struggles a lot with consistency. But if he can be a solid 5-6 guy in that lineup, I really like what he can do with the bat, and he can go through stretches of everything. But I think he steps into his own. And if those two guys can provide some protection for Goldschmidt, and maybe the Cardinals get another a player like, you know, like I said, like a Jock Peterson, maybe a Justin Turner, then I like what the Cardinals can look like in 2021. But if I'm a Cardinals fan, I'm really not holding my breath for that big, giant offseason splash. That might come in 2021 when they have a little bit more room in their payroll.
Yeah, that's what it feels like for me. And I think a lot of teams are going to kind of operate under that guise, whereas they're just kind of like, if you're kind of like at the Cardinals where you're not at a crossroads, you're not at necessarily a transition year, but you're obviously kind of, you're not quite the team you're going to be if you're going to compete in a couple of years. You would probably see them play it safe, figure out what you have and maybe certain guys and make that move. But I think you hit the nail on the head there, Lucas. It's really strange when you're watching a Cardinals game and Paul Goldschmidt comes up and batting cleanup is Brad Miller. Like, yeah. What? Like, that dude's more famous for not wearing batting gloves than anything else. Like, it was just weird to see him as a cleanup hitter. He hit well, actually, surprisingly. I mean, I think he was right on. He might have led the Cardinals in RBI, or maybe I think he was just behind him with Goldschmidt. But, mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that's not very good look. So I agree with you. I think getting some protection, but Paul DeJong's a guy that I think a lot better than I think people give him credit for. He's a very underrated shortstop too. Very good at the position, a lot better than I think people give him credit for. He does commit some errors, and that'll happen, but so does Javi Baez. Javi Baez commits a ton of errors and no one talks about that. So,
because he's Javi Baez. Look at how good he tags people. I mean,
did you see his tag? but I agree with you. I think getting someone, figuring out where Goldschmidt falls into this role, maybe you get experience for someone like Carlson. But I the biggest things you guys mentioned on is getting young players at bats. It's insane. The biggest example I always point to is Anthony Rizzo, who came up and got traded to the Cubs from San Diego and couldn't hit left-handed pitching. He played two seasons and all of a sudden he was kind of okay at hitting left-handed pitching. And it's almost like if you do it enough times, you might get better. I don't know why baseball's so against not giving some of these guys the plate appearances. And I get playing matchups is key. Joe Maddon did that a ton with those young guys. But now you look at a lot of these young guys, they don't really have the skills to be a complete baseball player. They're just really good at X, Y, and Z and not a complete guise of it. So I think getting experience is important. But if I had to, I guess, pick something I'm looking forward to for the Cubs in 2021, my big thing would be I hope we see more progression with Wilson Contreras behind the plate. He made massive strides this year in framing. He went from being one of the worst catchers to being one of the better ones, if not one of the best in the National League last year in framing. Small sample size, but just insane to see that jump. I'm looking forward to watching that. The other thing I'm interested in is the Cubs got kind of different with their bullpen this year, more so than they ever have. They usually went with a lot of younger or older guys who don't throw very hard, but just knew how to pitch in big moments. The Cubs kind of went the opposite. A lot of guys who have crazy stuff, but maybe not the best control of it at different times. And they got good results after maybe a couple rough few weeks. So I'm excited for that. If they can show they can develop players in that regard, maybe that means they don't have to trade guys like Eloy Jimenez and Dylan Cease anymore to get pitching. And that's really what set this Cubs team back. So if they can solve that issue, that makes me feel good about 2021 and further.
I like it, man. It's been an interesting season, this whole shortened idea. It's like we mentioned, it was basically like watching the months of April and May. And hopefully here in 2021, we'll get a few more months on top of that. Because
fingers crossed.
Yes, fingers crossed. It was good to talk to you guys, though.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. If you guys aren't following us on Twitter, you can follow Lucas on Twitter at LucasJFastball and follow, of course,
LJ Locked Fastball. On Card.
LJ, Jesus, I said Lucas J Fastball. That's funny. LJ Fastball. Gosh, I'm all over the place. And then LO underscore Cardinals. You can follow the handle for the podcast. Mm-hmm. And then Jeff Carr is at Jeff Carr. Follow Locked On Reds on Twitter, both that Jeff Carr and Locked On Reds. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean R. Sears. You can follow Locked On Cubs at Locked On Cubs. And then if you want to give Ben and our lockdown, I know we got introduced to the Cardinals or the
Ethan Smith. Pirates.
Is it Ethan Smith?
Ethan Smith, yeah.
I'll just say that so we can edit it and he doesn't have to know that I didn't know his name. and I think they're LO Pirates too, but let me double check.
And well, we as you look that up, Sean, we mentioned all the struggles offensively for really all of our teams at certain parts of the year. And a saying that you know better probably than any of us, there's always next year for all of our teams. There's always.
Yes. Always. Well, I think one thing that was weird, and I saw some of the lockdown or some of the Athletic guys diving into this too. It did feel like the pitchers were more ready for baseball this year than it did the hitters. And it was at least a little reassuring when I would go on like Twitter and just search MLB and see other people complaining about their team's offenses too. Because, man, did I feel like I was yelling at my TV a lot about people missing fastballs or swinging at pitches they shouldn't have. But
right.
Just hit the ball.
Oh, it's so easy. Not really. But you can follow Ethan Smith, who is obviously the Lockdown Pirates host. You can follow Lockdown Pirates. Yeah, obviously. And then Ben Larson, you can follow him. I believe he is Cheesehead Takes on Twitter. He hosts the Lockdown Brewers show. You can follow them at LO Brewers. But that's our Central crew. So we'll be I don't know about you guys. I've dropped down to about like maybe 3 episodes a week if I can come up with some stuff. I'm not trying to push out too much content, but we are desperate for it after a rough season for all of our teams. And we're hoping for maybe an exciting offseason. So stick around for Lockdown with Lockdown for more updates and hopefully an exciting offseason. Who knows with COVID involved, but maybe something fun, right?
We'll see how it goes. It'll be fun.
All right. Well, thanks for sticking around, guys. Appreciate we all working here. We appreciate everyone tuning in to listen. Enjoy the rest of your day and enjoy baseball while it's still around. Woo. Well, that's going to do it here for today's episode of Lockdown Cubs. Make sure you subscribe in whatever podcast app you use, whether that's Google, Apple, Spotify, TuneIn app, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, wherever you listen to your podcast. Make sure you subscribe and leave a 5-star review. Appreciate Lucas and Jeff being able to jump on the show, do this two-parter NL crossover episode. Hopefully we'll get Ethan Smith of Lockdown Pirates and Ben Larson of Lockdown Brewers later on this offseason to get their take on those two teams. But I am recording an episode with Ryan that should be released tomorrow, Wednesday, so it'll be nice to have. But we appreciate you guys sticking around. We've got more off-season content coming. The goal is going to try and stay close to daily as closely as I can here. We'll see what we got. We got some interviews coming up here later this week. I am talking to a former scout, hopefully this weekend, so we should have that maybe for you. Maybe Monday, Tuesday next week, but we've got a couple conversations coming here. Hopefully give us an idea of what to expect this offseason of just a million questions for the Cubs. But you guys enjoy the rest of your day. Keep an eye out for the interview with Ryan Davis for tomorrow. And as always, go Cubs.